Perez. Wilco makes a run ahead of it. Bergkamp suddenly changed pace through the centre. It's Bergkamp! That's magnificent! The move, and then this, which left Dabby's ass totally stranded.
Hello, dear listeners and viewers, and of course, people doing nothing, or neither, and welcome to Bergkamp Wonderland. Today, we are doing a kind of 90s remix of three wonderful podcasts all at the same time. We have, top right, we've got Mike from Not Another Arsenal podcast. Personally, one of my absolute favourites. It's you shouldn't miss it. Him and three people that know very little about football. They don't know anything. And every week he tries to school them, but it doesn't always work out well. How you doing, Mr. Hertz?
I'm doing great, man. Thanks for the invitation. Anytime I have the chance to sit down and talk Arsenal, here I am.
It is odd because every time we get you on, you have still broke the record for the most number of views we've ever had on a reel, 345, and the most on a preview show, which is about 500, which is, oh no, I think that's just been broken. Yeah, the Bayern Munich one beat it by about 5.
Unfortunately.
Sorry to break the news to you like that. Talking about sad and breaking news, the other one is from everybody's podcast. You name it, he's been on there. He is like the dirty smell in an old jumper that you can't get out. It's the magical Mike from
I'm a hoe. Let's just call it what it is. I go where I'm asked, but thanks for having me. It's been a while since I've been on a normal podcast with you. We did a Sunday roast a few weeks ago, and I don't know what happened with that, but we got to get back on to doing that again. But we'll talk some Arsenal tonight.
Yeah, I thought my lot, the only two that were available was Nick and Melvin. And I thought, well, they did a show last week. I thought people do like it when we do the late night preview shows that Mr. Hertz has done a few with us. People like it. And we got a lot of people from North America and South America listen to us. I thought, who can I get? And no one was available. So I got you two. So, you know,
you got me to appeal to the North Americans and Mikey to appeal to the South Americans.
Sean's actually learning Spanish at the moment. She does one lesson every night on her phone. Well, Duolingo.
Oh, I love that. I'm learning Portuguese right now for no real reason at all.
You don't speak any Spanish.
I don't, yeah.
Are you thinking of going to Brazil or something?
Just a little fun fact on the learning Portuguese. I actually set the Duolingo settings on a Spanish speaker learning Portuguese instead of an English speak because they're so similar. They're incredibly similar. So,
you're just taking the easy way out.
Yeah. When I started learning it from English to Portuguese, my mind would think of it in Spanish, then go to Portuguese. And then I'm like, dude, cut out the middleman. So I just erased English, what I already struggle with, and just went from Spanish to Portuguese. So
have you gone Brazilian Portuguese or Portuguese?
Why? I don't know, Danny, but you know, eventually Mike's going to be stranded in Portugal. So I'm watching like a Champions League game and he's going to call me. I'm going to be his friend. I'm going to help him out.
Brazilian Portuguese is just regular Portuguese with less pubic hair.
Excellent. That is a medical fact. Dr. Roof, a friend of the family, told him that many, many years ago. Bless her. Say hello to some of the people in the chat. We've got Phil Macker. I don't know why you're up this time of night, Phil, but he's always there. Apart from one of the last ones, he was asleep. Sad times. You're there, obviously, and you're still there. An Englishman in Canada. Hello. Stefan. Don't you ever sleep, Stefan. Tom Andrew. Oi, oi. BX Gunner. Who I see in every Arsenal podcast I go and watch, he's in there supporting them all. Lovely. Christ, millionaire skinny Danny isn't in a pool.
It's behind me. It's a little, it'd be a little cold. We had rain today, so the top of the pool will be actually non-heated, and I can't be dealing with that.
There would be shrinkage.
Gotta be at least, let me do the conversion here real quick. Gotta be at least 35 degrees in the pool.
It was actually, I went today about 10:30, I went out the front of mine just to open the door and go, and I do that every night, just going to a few breaths of fresh air, then I quickly rush back. It's 18 degrees out there, and there was a little warm breeze. I thought, oh, this must be what it's like to have a camp in a tent in the back of Mike's garden if I'm not being eaten by alligators. Great days.
That's what this cage keeps me. It keeps me in, it keeps them out. I'm not sure which is more important.
I'd take the risk. I'd be a man about it and just get on with it. I'd say, come at me, you toothy swines. I nearly said fuckers then. That'd be good. That'd have got us demonetized. How do we feel about the Champions League thing? Other Mike, top Mike. I call you Mr. Hertz, Mr. Feinberg. Easy for everyone. Mr. Hertz, how do you feel about the Champions League? Because I'm quite happy with that result.
Oh, you're happy. See, I was hoping we were going to talk about Liverpool loss versus Atalanta today. That's where the real banter is.
I can't up in tears.
I was told this was an in-depth breakdown of the Atalanta game. And yes. We've been lied to, Mike.
We've been lied to. I'm less confident than I initially was. When we first drew Bayern Munich, I was like, oh, we got this in the bag. There's no two ways about it. Blood bank guaranteed Arsenal are going to smash them at home and keep the composure and see it through in Germany. But unfortunately, things unraveled quick. Now, defensively, I hate to say, Danny, that the occasion was too big, because I feel like that's like the easiest thing to say, because it's the first time we're in the quarterfinals since 14 years, I think, now.
Yeah.
But I was surprised at the lack of composure some of our key players showed. So it's very unfortunate. All in all, without the away goal rule, which I am actually pro, it's pretty much 0-0. Yeah, I'm a big fan of the away goal. I really liked it. So I was pretty bummed.
I knew there was one out there.
There was one out there. Yes, there's always one. There's always one. So
we found the away goal rule fan.
Yes, but unfortunately, or fortunately, I should say, it doesn't apply this time around. So we're not as in deep in crap as we would be in a few years ago. So, optimistic that moving forward, we could still cause fear and score goals, but our defense versus their offense seemed equally as shaky. So I'm a little concerned about that, but it does need to be said that Coleman is semi-healthy. So no guarantee he's going to be able to start. Gnabry has a hamstring and Davies will be missing. So those are three pretty big features for them. So fingers crossed, man. I am hoping for a semifinal so I could get my heart broken there.
Mr. Feinberg, you're no stranger to a semi. How are you feeling about that?
I feel, half and half. Okay. No, it's – I went into this quite nervous because, look, first of all, I do think that the Champions League is a very different competition than the Premier League is. I mean, that's obvious and it's literally true. But from a figurative standpoint, with the growth of this team, while we've put together better and better and better performances in the league every single year – we haven't really had the opportunity to do that in Europe. And, when we've played in the second tier European competitions, we haven't even done that well in those. So, I did worry about finally going up against one of the European giants. Yes, they're in a down year. Yes, they're as beatable as they've probably ever been before, as we saw in their two Bundesliga games leading directly up to this one. They couldn't even hold a lead. They're ripe for the taking, but it's Bayern Munich in the Champions League. You don't take that for granted. So to go up 1-0, to be kind of on our front foot against them, I started to feel a little bit more confident as the game went by. And then the exact thing that we were worried about hit, which is just kind of lack of composure, naivety, stupid mistakes, which, look, if you take it over the last 20 games, how many dumb defensive mistakes have we made? It might be just those two that we made against Bayern and maybe one other one. So that's not a bad record over 20 games, but when it's in 90 minutes of football in a very, very important game, you don't like to see it. So all in all, considering the four really big refereeing moments that I'm sure we'll discuss in that game and the fact that three of them went against us, in my opinion, and we still ended up even with the ability to draw there and win in extra time or penalties, or preferably nick one on them and go through. I'm not upset to be in this position, but it really, really would have been nice to have a 3-2.
Do you think there's enough time for Mr. Hertz, for Arteta to have learned from the mistakes that happened and, like Mike was saying, the bad luck to affect the away leg? I'm just looking. The last game Dortmund and Bayern played at home, they lost 2-0 to Dortmund. Dortmund are my boys. They're not very good, and they beat them. And then they had a run of about five wins at home. And then Werder Bremen beat them at home. And then FC Copenhagen drew with them at Bayern Munich. So there's something for us to grasp onto there, isn't there?
Yeah, they were saying during the game, actually, that they have some of the worst home record out there on their entirety of the season. And vice versa, us on the other side, we're doing fantastic in the away legs. So I take everything on board. I do think Arteta is incredibly tactically astute. So if there's adjustments to be made, he'll make them. Maybe potentially Kvyat doesn't start, even though I have a lot of sympathy and love for Kvyat. But just Sané is just such an unreal player that it just wasn't his night, man. So he took him aboard. So well, interesting to see who's going to start left back. But they do leak goals. They leak a lot of goals at home. So it makes me feel that in the grand scheme of thing, the way the team has been playing, we don't shoot ourselves in the foot like that as often as we used to do. And because of that, I could see us putting in a good defensive performance and keeping it 0-0 or not concede. So I'm hopeful that there'll be changes and that we'll be able to modify. And again, I will say I'm big time banking on Davis not being there, Davies not being there, and it's going to be Guerreiro versus Saka, and it's not going to be Gnabry. And I think those are two big, massive parts on their entire left flank. So it's reason to be optimistic, but I'm going to say I'm more cautiously optimistic now after the first game, because I did feel like they smelled blood and they made us pay for the fullest on both of our mistakes. I mean, even the first goal, which we'll get on to, yeah, the Ryan Gabriel thing was a mistake, but they did have to execute to perfection to get in back into the box and score that goal. So going forward, they are pretty lethal, but I kind of consider them as a glass cannon. So high offense, really bad defensive numbers. I think if we're a little bit more sharp, or the rub of the green, if you will goes our way, it shouldn't be that bad.
Look at you using bowling terms, Mike. Has Arteta got enough time to fix what went wrong? I know you said three things were unlucky, and one, I've got a video of why this podcast is called Harry Kane's MMA Masterclass. I've got the video of that, so we can talk about that if you want.
Yeah, that's one of the four underwriting decisions. I don't know that they were all wrong, all of them, but there were four flashpoints. I mean, the two penalty calls, the Gabriel picking up the ball thing, and then Kane's elbow. And like I said, three of them ended up going against us. The one that didn't is Gabriel picking up the ball. But, you know, this is the first time in a while in any game at all that I have seen the starting 11 and said, you sure about that? And that is the Kvyat thing at left back. Like, you know,
I was the opposite.
I Kvyat, you know, I honestly probably would have felt the same way if it was Zinchenko starting as well. My concern was that you needed to start the best defender in that position in that game, in my opinion. And of the three, unless he wasn't fit enough to play 60 minutes, that would have been Tomiyasu, in my opinion. I mean, imagine if Timber was healthy, he would have, you know, probably played that position. We have
so you're saying Timber to start in Germany. I mean, Tomiyasu to start in Germany, or are you waiting to see what happens at Villa?
I mean, if it were up to me, I would do that, because I think he's better equipped to handle a you know, really pacey, really talented winger.
Plus, he's a unit.
But
Tomiyasu's pocketed Salah multiple occasions, so you got plenty of proof to back that opinion too, Mike.
Yeah, and you don't know that, you know, what the trainers were telling him about his fitness or all that. I mean, but we've seen him in games. I thought he would have been the right person to start at left back. You know, and there's a shout for potentially having played Gabby Jesus for his experience in that game.
He did make a massive difference when he came on.
He did. And you know, it's easy to say when someone comes on like Trossard and Jesus that, you know, that they should start the next game. I don't always agree with that. You know, I've been claiming all year that, you know, I like Trossard coming on in the 65th minute. Like, would I love for his 25 minutes that he plays every game to be replicated over 90? Sure, but I'm not sure that it would. So, like, sometimes you want some people on reserve in the bench. And if you have Martinelli and the ability to bring Trossard on for him against an exhausted right back, you do it, and it works out to perfection. And Trossard seems very happy with that role. So, you know, there are some people that I'd like to see as subs, but, you know, Kiwior to me in a Champions League game, he's the guy you bring on when you're protecting a lead, like we used to bring on, you know, Elneny or somebody like that, you know, and so that was really my only scratching my head point. Tactically speaking, other than that, you know, it really wasn't down to Arteta's tactics that we, you know, I mean, it was mistakes. It was individual naivety and mistakes. And that's where you do, you know, you do wonder, was this just a completely random occurrence, or were these guys nervous when they were thinking about what they were playing for? Because those players have not ever been in that position before. And I'd say 10 out of the 11 Bayern players, without even thinking about it, probably have been.
So has Arteta had enough time to drill into them what went wrong and how to fix it? Because normally under Wenger, they'd go to the away leg, as we saw 5-1, they get smashed again. They will never learn their lessons.
Arteta does tend to avenge defeats, and I know this wasn't a defeat, but he, you know, he's avenged every single defeat that he's had the opportunity to avenge this year. Villa is the next opportunity. The next unavenged opportunity this Sunday. And the only loss that we have that we haven't avenged is Fulham, because we won't have a chance to avenge. Bayern wasn't a loss, but it certainly kind of felt like one. And we only have one chance left. So I don't have any doubt that the team will be ready on Wednesday next week. The question is, do we end up with individual mistakes? Do we get the breakthroughs that we need? And, you know, it's going to start with defense, because if we don't allow a goal, we cannot lose that tie in regular time.
Just,
and I think that's going to be Arteta. I think Arteta is going to be more the away at Man City type of tactics than the, you know, away at Sheffield United type of tactics.
Just one last thing on the left back thing, Mike. Did you squint just because of the inexperience of Kiwior? Because I kind of looked at it like, maybe being naive. There's a small podcast out there called The Gunner Talk. You might know them. Tom Kansen, I believe.
It's on too early for me. I can't get up at 3 o'clock.
He's only 14. It's aimed at children.
He's so, a fetus. Is that the fetus podcast?
He's FIFA generation. He wouldn't know about this. But I do. He did bring up a pretty interesting counterpoint, because I know a lot of people. Me, when the starting lineup rolled out, I was like, I'm okay with it. Like, I didn't have any problems, me personally. But some people are like, no, not Kiwior. And everybody had Tomiyasu, just like you and mine. And out of the three, if we're thinking about defensive shifts, yeah, I'm not going to argue with him that he's potentially the best out of the three, being that Timber's not fit. However, Tom, where I was going with this is he did point out a good point that, like, I forgot. I think it was Zinchenko that got injured versus Liverpool when we were at Anfield, and he came in second half, did a really good job that we ended up drawing there. He's also the player that started at left back versus Manchester City, held the lines, kept everything 0-0 intact the way it was. So I personally am leaning more, because I see a lot of,
what was the game? What was the game he was subbed out at halftime? I mean, he was really, really struggling.
Oh, I thought it was this. Well, he got subbed out this game.
But I feel like there was one within
the
past.
Who are you talking about?
Four games. Kiwior. There was a game in the past three or four where he looked absolutely overmatched. Now, I'm not criticizing him as a player, because he's been so much improved this year compared to what he was last year. But, you know, there's a point to be made for both. But I tend to think that go with someone that is a little bit more, you know, gives you a little bit more confidence defensively, in my opinion. But,
that was,
you know,
away at Fulham, got taken off our 46th minute when we lost 2-1.
Yeah, but that was a lot longer ago than I'm thinking within the past. I mean, because he's had a very good match.
After 66 minutes against Man City, and the game before that, after 79 v Brentford.
Yeah. Well, there was one game, and I thought it was City, where he looked like the weakest link on the pitch. And it's easy to be that with how well everyone's been playing, but I do think it was the Man City game. Yeah.
Okay.
And you know, with that, you wonder, you know, is the occasion too much for him? I'd like to think it's not, but you know, if I would have been fine with it if it was just basically between him and Zinchenko and we didn't have any other options. But with Tomiyasu healthy, I would have liked to have seen him start.
Yeah, he's potentially definitely the most greenest out of all the greenest players that we had, because he did only play in Serie A maybe one or two seasons. And after that, you know, like, and he's played in different positions majority of the time at center back. So for him, every time we hit these big games, pretty much like he's living the biggest game of his career week after week, essentially. Yeah. Every time, like, you know, hey, Anfield, biggest game of his career. Manchester City, biggest game of his career. Quarterfinal, biggest game of his career. So, yeah.
Get bigger from here. There's no small games left for him. So if he's gonna hold that spot, even in the Premier League games, I mean, there's not gonna be much breathing room for him to have an off game, because there's one and soon to be two people that are champing at the bit to fill his spot.
Agreed.
Mr. Hurst got a relevant question from Phil Mack. It's the only one he makes of the night, so please make the best of it. The way we play now, is there a way back for a fit Kieran Tierney? Mm-hmm. I mean, how far into Kieran Tierney was I before your head was screaming no?
Well, yeah, okay, first and foremost, I'll address the fit part. He's missed nearly half of Real Sociedad's season thus far.
But also, when he has played for them, they went on their best run of results and their best run of not conceding goals.
Okay, I was trying to take the more political way. No, I don't think he's no, man. I just don't think so, because even Kiwior, even though he's not the one that's inverting, so to say, because Ben White's been taking the mantle off of or the responsibility off of Kiwior since we don't have Zinchenko most of the time. He's just more tailored to like an old school style of left back, I would say. Like, every time you hear a player talk, Xhaka mentioned it when he went to Germany, there's a lot of players saying that the information that Arteta provides you with going into these games is just a massive amount of information that you need to take in. And Tierney is very much of the mold of Unai and early Arteta days, where like, hey, get to the byline and cross it, and then we'll figure it out from there. And now we, you know, when Ben White and or Martinelli, for the most part on the left side, they don't just cross it in. They cut into the box and selectively pick and choose where that ball is going. So he's more of a, as long as I make it back to the byline and whoop that ball in, I've done my job. And I just don't see him at his age, and I know he's mid-20s probably, just completely changing. It's kind of who he's been in his entirety of his career. So, yeah, I don't think there's a way back, man. I think the hope for Arsenal was him going to Real Sociedad, very similar to Balogun. There you go. Loan him out, hoping he could perform at a decent level and a consistent rate, and hopefully get his fee back up. Because I would say that his name, because of his injury list, is probably slightly tarnished, I would say. So he's a little bit of a bigger gamble to pay the full, I can't remember what we bought him for, 20, 30
24.
Million? 24. So at this rate, with the amount of injuries he's had, if you said we get 24 back, I would consider it slightly good business. I don't know if you disagree with that, Mike.
No, I would agree with that 100%. If we can get 24 back for him, and, you know, there was discussion last summer of selling him to Newcastle for, you know, and then the argument was, what's fair? Is 20 fair? Do we hold Newcastle for 45 because it's a rival, quote unquote? How did that turn out? Yeah, I mean, at this point, he's damaged goods. He just can't stay healthy wherever he goes. When you leave Arsenal and you still can't stay healthy, that's a sign that you're injury prone. Because, you know, anyone comes to Arsenal, they get hurt. That's just part and parcel of coming to Arsenal. But yeah, when you leave and you're still getting hurt, that's not good for you. I don't think there's a way back for him. It's just, no. You know, it more so even because of the dynamic where, and I always said he's probably great in the dressing room. He's a great team guy. I mean, you got to love him running around in shorts and short sleeves in the middle of the winter. You know, he seems like he would be not a problem like a lot of other players that we've had in the dressing room. He would be part of this Arteta revolution, but there's just been enough of a freeze out there that you don't think that they could really move forward from that. So I think it's one of those respectful, you know, let's not just go anywhere you want because we don't want you anymore type of situations. But I mean, we've got left backs. We've got Timber coming back. We've got Tomiyasu who can play left or right back. Timber, who can play left or right back, Kivior. Zinchenko, and, you know,
Kivior.
I mean, there's no room for him.
No, it's a shame. I mean, he's getting his games back. The last few games that he's had playing for Sociedad, he came on as a sub for 21, sub at halftime. The game before that, he played 84 minutes. But then he had 5 games out of hamstring, played 7, 6 games out of a hamstring, played 4. This is sad, but yeah, that's the end of him. Mike, Mr. Feinberg, Mr. Hertz was saying about the role that Benny Blanco was playing on the right-hand side. The beginning of the Bayern game, were you surprised to see how much further forward Ben White was getting and how much defending, tracking back that Saka was doing? It was like the old days when he made his debut as a fullback, wasn't it?
You know, it's funny you should say that, because I am usually the worst person to bring a tactical question or a formation question to, because I kind of watch football with my eyes.
I'm oblivious to it. I'm just there to be entertained. I don't take any notice.
I watch it with my eyes glazed over. I'm usually in the pool watching it from about 20 feet away. You know, those nuances tend to be lost on me, but I did notice that in this game. I mean, there were a few overlapping runs, and a few times it wasn't even really overlapping. It was just Ben White.
Plus the shots he had at goal.
Yeah, well, that wasn't – he didn't cover himself in glory with that shot. I mean, my God, that could have put the game away almost. But yeah, he was routinely playing far forward. And you know, Saka, to his credit, he doesn't mind doing that work. He's no Mesut Ozil. He'll track back. He'll do exactly what's necessary, and that's what you got to love about him. I mean, you know, you'd rather have him further forward than back on defense, but when you start to see the way that Ben White crosses the ball and the way he picks out players in the middle when he does get forward, you understand why he's there. So it was maybe a little bit more than normal, but I think that's how we want to play on that side. And with it, you know, with their defense being suspect, I you know, Ben White can break that down. So yeah.
So are we confident we can do it in the return leg?
I'm not confident. I wouldn't say, Jesus, what did I give all my weight away to Mesut Ozil? I'm confident that it's not over. I'm not super confident that we're going to win, but I'm you know, I feel like this tie is completely up for grabs at this point. And, you know, it could have been a lot worse. You know, if we had left down 2-1, I would have been feeling a lot worse about it. Who was that? What was that last one?
That was Arteta.
Yeah, Arteta.
Jesus.
All his hair went to his little mustache there.
It's wonderful. I don't know. Michael Arkwright, Ordnance Wizard, used to get collection cards back in the day. And yeah, that's one. Looks just like him.
Lovely.
His mate, Mikel. Mr. Hertz. Are we going to make it through? Because I'm confident, because Alonso Davis isn't going to be there.
Mm-hmm. Harry He's Canadian, Kane, though. I mean, how good could he be?
Well, I'm surprised he doesn't go around with a hockey stick whacking people. There's so many factors that can be said for each side. But as a general, this season, Arsenal have been – that was a below Arsenal performance, but it was an above par performance for Bayern Munich, wasn't it? So we got to grab something from that.
Yeah, I'm foolishly expecting to go through. Similar to what Mike said, it's not necessarily that the game plan didn't work, more so that the game plan was poorly executed. And we don't tend to poorly execute game plans a lot. So I just don't see Raya coming off 10 yards up the field more than he should. Gabriel panicking with the ball. I love these pictures you're putting. I just don't see it happening. Game after game after game, it's something that we normally bounce back with. The players know they did wrong. The players themselves would have spoken to themselves for better communication. Arteta, I'm sure, had briefed them and spoke to them about what to look out more. But they're an incredibly well-drilled team. So based on the current state of Arsenal and the manner in which they're playing and the consistency in which they're playing at a high level, I have zero reason to believe that they just crapped the bread and that they're going to do it again. So I'm leaning to way more confident than not. So if I had to put a percentage, I'll say 60-40, Arsenal will make it through.
How about you, Mike?
Well, I'm going to predict a 2-2. for once. I never do that, but yeah, I literally feel like it's a toss up. I mean, if it had been 3-2, which a lot of people are arguing it should have been, assuming we would have made the penalty that we would have gotten, I would have felt very confident that we could steer our way through that and just not lose the game. But at 2-2, I mean, I think it'll be a wide open game. I think Arteta won't want it to be, but I think Bayern's going to go for it. So, you know, if a team's going for it like that, with especially with a suspect defense, whoever gets the first goal, you know, whether we get it on a counterattack or take advantage of their, you know, their loosey-goosey play, then, you know, then that could bode well for us. But I honestly feel 50-50. It's a complete toss-up. And I really, really, really want to go through, because I will be over for the semifinals. This round, everyone was like, you got to be going. I was at Porto. You got to be going to the quarterfinals. I'm like, no, I got shit to do. But the semis, I would be over there for, and I have never been to a Champions League semifinal that involved Arsenal. I was at the Champions League semifinal 2 seasons ago, but unfortunately, it was other shitty ass teams. Oops, sorry.
But we did see with the other semifinals that Man City, Real Madrid 3-3, people banging in goals all over the place. Real and Barcelona, PSG, that ended 3-2 to Barcelona in the away team, and not a lot of great defending going on there. And in the other game was Dortmund lost 2-1 at Atletico, and Dortmund were horrendous for most of that game, but they managed to beat Bayern last week in the Bundesliga. So I'm pretty confident, because if you have, there's two types of football that you can play. You can say we're going to play attacking football, you can play defensive football. We're better at attacking football. And I think sometimes when we try and play the defending football, that's when things can occasionally go wrong, or we can have bad luck, or things go against us. So I'm definitely going to go where we can win it. It's not going to be go there and beat them 5-0 or anything like that. It's going to be by a goal, and hopefully that one goal will be us. But anybody know what happens if it is a 2-2 draw? Is it then extra time and then penalties?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, same thing that happened against Porto.
Right, that's what I thought.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't matter whether it's 1-1, 2-2, 3-3, 0-0. If it's level at the end, in aggregate, it goes to 30 minutes of extra time, and then it'll go to penalties.
So if we do get through to the next round, Mr. Hertz, you're a man who keeps a beady eye on this. Man City, Real Madrid, we're going to get the winner of that. That ended 3-3. People just scoring for fun from the middle of the park. What's your prediction for how the second leg of that is going to go at the Etihad?
I think Man City is going to take Real Madrid around the corner and beat the ever living shit out of them.
That was the game I was at a couple of years ago, the semifinal where the second leg they dismantled Real Madrid. I think it was 4-1 or 5-1 or something. I mean, it was absolutely ridiculous. And then I looked behind me and around me, and all the Man City fans were politely clapping that they had made the Champions League final, which made me want to throw shit at them. But.
Yeah, no, I mean, dude, you know what's incredible? And I was thinking this as I'm pissing myself watching the Arsenal game. I kept track of the other game. I wasn't watching it, but I just kept track on the stats. And I just thought it was crazy. It was 3-3 and both teams had 0.83 or so XG. And don't want to drive you guys too crazy about the XG, but to me, that just tells me they're ridiculously elite, clinical. So when they can bury a goal, they have players that are going to bury a goal. But they hung in there. They gave Manchester City a really good game. But ultimately, going back to England, I don't know, man. Man City, they're just a machine. So well organized. They know exactly what to do. So unless Real Madrid is planning on going there and defending like their life depended on it, like Arsenal did, I don't see them finding much joy. And I'll tell you right now, from what I've seen with Real Madrid and know about Ancelotti, they're not a defensive setup type of team. So they're going to go for it. So I'm hoping, praying to the football gods that the Jude Bellingham you know, magic can work itself out. Or maybe they could loan in PSG, you know, the Mbappe already, you know, just get that ball rolling. hopefully that way they could stand up to Manchester City. So, yeah, probably like 3-1, Danny, to City, unfortunately. And I hate football.
But, Magic, who do we want in the semi-final then? Because we've played Man City 3 times this season. Charity Shield 0-0, beat them on penalties. And then we beat them, was it 3-1 at our place? Or
1-0.
1-0. I knew it was some number. And yeah, then we drew at their place. Would we want a known factor of Man City in the semi-final, or would you risk it for Real Madrid?
Those are the two best teams left in the Champions League. So I mean, you're going to get the toughest team out of the four, or out of the three that we could play in the semifinals, no matter what. Real Madrid is never – I mean, they're not a weak Real Madrid, and Real Madrid in the Champions League kind of knows what they're doing. You know, it doesn't really seem to matter who's playing for them. So that would certainly – I would prefer to play Real Madrid solely because we wouldn't be playing Man City five times in one season. Who do I think we had would have a better chance of getting through against? Man City, surprisingly. But Real Madrid, better away trip. Much better away trip if I'm lucky enough to be able to get a ticket for it. And B, you know, it's just the way that they play, like Mikey said, they're going to play an entertaining version of football, and you're going to see some goals. You're going to see, you know, you're going to see a lot of offense, and I think that would be, you know, better viewing. But I don't know that we have a better chance of beating Madrid than we do Man City.
My mate Kelly has a theory saying that he believes it'd be easier to go up against Real Madrid. It seems like every time we go up versus Manchester City, just because we have that history and we haven't like defeated them in the Etihad, and they smashed us for like, you know, whatever, 10 years straight, what it feels like. But
in three games, we're basically 2-1 on aggregate against them and haven't lost any of them. I mean, I guess that comes to an end when you, it's hard. They always say in the NFL, they're like, it's hard to beat the same team three times in one season. The third time being if you play them in the playoffs.
Yeah.
I would imagine it's hard not to lose to a Manchester City five times, but
I feel even as a fan, I'm going to say the game seemed more stressful watching them. And I do believe that it takes its toll, not only physically, but mentally on the players. I do think that like the level of concentration that our players, I think Arteta said that in the post game conference where, you know, he was saying what does X player needs to be do to play for, against Manchester City. And he said he needs to be able to focus on 40 passes, get the ball, lose the ball in 40, and track another 40 passes. So they have to be zoned into this. And I just, so his whole theory was, dude, if they go 90-90 again, most likely they surrender the title to Liverpool at that rate, because they're going to be so hyper focused on these massive games that it's going to take so much out of them. They're bound to slip up in the league. That's just a nice little conspiracy theory or thought process that my buddy, my co-host Kelly has.
Oh, we all know they're all on crack. So you brought up the Liverpool, Mr. Hertz, and like me, you keep a beady eye on all the European games. Just a few results from tonight's Europa League, which is the middle trophy of the three. Liverpool, who are going to go for the quadruple. What's that? Oh, they're out of the FA Cup? Oh, what, they could now be out of the Europa League because they've lost again. Oh dear. They drew at the weekend to Man United. Oh, so there's, you can only have one team top at a time at the Premier League. You can't have two at the top. They lost 3-0 at home.
They're joint top. They're joint top, aren't they?
Apparently, there's no such thing.
If the season ended today, we would each get half of the trophy.
That all makes sense to me.
That's what I'm saying.
They might get three quarters because they played pretty football.
Well, that's true, and it would be a, you know, farewell present for Jurgen Klopp.
I found this little beauty. There is no such thing as joint top of the league, and a man's holding a sign, and it's not been photoshopped. So that makes.
I already brought in one obscure little thing as far as away goals go in Champions League. Let me bring up another obscure little thing that other leagues do. You guys could tell me if you like it or not. In Spain. it's not by how many your goal difference. It's their head to head.
Yes.
Yeah, I remember that because I think that actually decided the league of, within the last few years. I forget who it was, but
yeah, it was Real Madrid, Barcelona, I believe. And Madrid got the best of them on two games. So yeah, if you guys had, obviously we have like plus whatever 9 or 12 goals right now. So we're looking very pretty at the moment, but just out of preference, try to take yourself away from the Arsenal thing. Do you think it's fair that it's a head to head, or do you think
no?
It pans out because at the end of the day, each
when you have
36 games,
when you in some sports, head to head comes into play. Again, to mention the NFL, head to head can come into play because you don't, you know, your one team plays 15, or they play actually like 11 other teams, and there's 32 teams, so you're not playing the same teams the same amount of times in the same places. But the that's what's so perfect about the Premier League is you got 19 games away, 19 games home against the same teams. Everybody plays over the season. Yes, you get different teams injured and not injured and so on and so forth. But, you know, you have to use a global way of tie-breaking. Head-to-head could be is way more skewed than that because, you know, again, if you had somebody suspended on a red, you know, two people suspended for red cards in the game before you played that team and you lose to them because of that, is that really a representation that you don't deserve to win the league in a tiebreaker? So no, I don't think head to head is the right way of doing it in that league. My follow up question, Danny, to you is obviously it's points. If points are tied, it's goal difference. If goal difference is tied, it's goals for, as we saw on May 26, 1989. What happens if all of those are the same?
Royal Rumble.
Go down to who flags are hotter. I just can't remember what the answer is. That has been asked before.
Is there an actual answer?
There's got to be because, I mean,
did they replay?
Where have I saved these?
Danny, I don't even know what to Google search.
It's number of goals scored.
Okay.
Then the team who collected the most points in the head-to-head. So head-to-head is the fourth rather than being the first one.
It does all come in, but I don't remember what the final. It may be something as stupid as flip of a coin, or is it? It's a game, isn't it? They play each other.
Well, it's most points in the head to head. So if they each won one, then it's who scored the most away goals in the head to head. And if that's tied, then
has this ever happened in the history of the
game? Well, no. I mean, the closest that it ever happened, I think, in top flight English football was Anfield 89, which went down to the third tiebreaker of goals for.
And what happened?
It will be a game. If they're all tied, it will be a game to decide the title.
You're kidding.
It'll go full American.
That's unbelievable. They would actually play a game to decide the title. That,
you know, it'd be,
imagine
you know,
getting like the scramble to get tickets for that.
Yeah, but it would be played in Dubai, wouldn't it?
Thing, right?
Oh, I'm sure it would be played in Dubai. Like, can you imagine the season is over, some wacky thing happens, and all of those things end up level, and
Undertaker comes out with
Well, it can't, can it? Because there's only three teams that are going to win the league, and we've beaten Liverpool and drawn with them. We drew and beat Man City, so it's never going
to
happen.
This season, if it came down to that, somehow we would end up with the tiebreaker. But like, just in general, if it came down to that, and they had to schedule another game, figure out who was going to get all the would that game be at Wembley?
No, in the FA, no. They would look at it and try and make a massive amount of money. And if
they play it at SoFi Stadium.
Yeah, if they said Wembley, they'd go, well, Arsenal got the advantage because it's a London game.
Yeah,
that's playing at Wembley is the advantage to nobody because it's in the middle of
it. So they do it at the one in Cardiff.
Milton Keynes? Oh, Cardiff. Fucking hell. Another shithole.
We'll do it in Cricklewood.
Yeah, another shithole. It's not all over in the league because I remember saying but this the podcast last week, Man United will get points off of Liverpool in that game. And Man United were unlucky not to get all 3 points out of that game. So at the moment, all we have to do is win 8 games and the title is ours. Because then, we were ahead of goal difference by about 8, I think.
If we win every game, then Liverpool's not going to catch us in goal difference.
But tonight, yeah, they lost.
Liverpool have to win 3-0 per, right, essentially. If we win 1-0 per.
Yeah, well, then they would overtake us. But that's just, yeah. I mean, that's just not going to happen.
But tonight, man, it was Liverpool.
I also don't think we're going to win all eight games, but that's a different conversation.
Seven more games, Mike. So now totally believe it.
Oh, seven? Okay, that's easy.
Yes, done.
Every game, it gets one game less. So should we take anything, Mike?
From it just cannot. It cannot be. It cannot come down to that Manchester United away game, because I will be in Benidorm with Owen and his Irish friends at his stag do, sitting there miserable that I'm not at the game if that's the one where we end up winning the league.
Yeah, but they hate Liverpool more than they hate anything else. They hate them more than they hate Man City. And if they can help us, I'm sure Man United will help us win the league. I'm sure they will.
No, but I mean, when we play them the second to last week of the season.
That's what I mean. They'll let us win.
I know. And if I'm not at that game, I'm going to be.
Because you're going to be there. Okay.
I'm going to be in England, but then I'm taking that particular weekend Owen chose for his stag do.
Stag
do is a bachelor party.
Okay, thank you.
Americans or the Mexican.
Do you guys have any hope that Spurs is going to do something at the end of the season to stop Chelsea? City? Sorry.
God, we're going to have to root for them, aren't we?
We're going to have to for them, yes.
I wonder whether those hard, you know, proper gentlemen who, you ain't an Arsenal supporter if you root for Spurs on any occasion, no matter what is going on. I like to think I'm as proper as the next person is when it comes to supporting Arsenal and hating Spurs. But, you know, if we give away the league because – I mean, not that it's up to us, but if we don't win the league because Spurs – I'm not going to be rooting for Spurs to lose against Manchester City in that game.
I mean, you can't do, because we want to win the title. I mean, I don't care if they beat them 12-0. If it helps us win the title, congratulations.
If it was between us getting third or fourth place or even fourth or fifth place, that was kind of recently a situation. Mm. Like, do you root for Spurs if it knocks us out of the Champions League? That's even debatable. I wouldn't root against them in that situation if it directly impacted that. But if we are neck and neck with two other teams and they're playing one of them, yep, and they're like 25 points behind us in the table, goddamn, I'll stand on a basketball.
Well, Danny, speaking about Spurs, are we going to talk about the Harry Kane elbow?
I've got a bit of trivia here for you first of all. Magic, I don't expect you to. So do you know who this is, Magic?
Oh, shit. I hate when people do this, because that's during my dark period.
He's Scottish.
He's not ringing a bell for me.
This person was mentioned on the preview show that me and Mr. Hertz did, and he thought I was joking about his name.
Oh, Dickoff, yeah. I've heard of him. I just wouldn't have been able to place the face with the name.
Dickoff.
And I didn't expect you to know, because he didn't really play much for Arsenal. But he has the feat that our last game was against, we played Luton, Man City, and who was the other one he played for? Luton, Man City, and Brighton. All three of those games, our last three preview shows, he played for all three teams in a row. I don't think that's ever happened before. I will knock him up an award for that. But that was quite strange.
But he didn't go to Villa, did he?
I don't think he did. No. It was a very nice bloke. And then he scored the goal for Man City in the playoff that got them out of the third tier of English football. So it's his fault Man City are where they are now. Mr. Hertz, you were saying, are we going to talk about what? Oh, the Harriet. Yes, I've got it here. How can anybody? There was somebody watching our podcast with me and Deke the other day, and he said he was a coach or a referee, one of the two, and he said this was not a foul by Harry Kane.
Wasn't a foul?
Yeah. Not a foul. Yeah. Not a yellow card, not a red card, wasn't even a foul. Harry didn't know he was there, and you can quite clearly see Harry looks left and then gives him the elbow. Oh, don't play it again. There you go.
Yeah,
gentlemen, we'll talk about that
referee guy from ESPN, Dale Johnson, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so he comes out with some of the most ridiculous.
Who was it that got blocked by him in our in my our Twitter?
My buddy Chris. My buddy Chris, because he called him a clown.
Christian, right?
Yeah. Chris is the gift that keeps on giving. When a rival team loses or somebody justifies a ref, he's the gift. He's the person you want to follow on Twitter because
he comes across as so. He's like, and I know he's in the chat. Jared, like Jared and Chris remind me of each other in the sense that they both like they're the normal person on each of their respective podcasts.
Baby faces happens,
but they can both go there though. Yeah. They can go there when it's needed.
So Dale Johnson, what he was saying is like when VAR was reviewing it, they were going to look at his hand and if it was clenched. Because clinched elbow seems to be more aggressive, but his hand is open, so it can't mean an elbow. But I don't, like I said,
I even
watching it live,
that makes a little bit of sense to me. Yeah. But I wouldn't treat it as a black and white rule, though. I mean, like it doesn't.
we'll talk about that.
Yeah, like your hand's open, and you know, so if your hand's open, and you go with tremendous amount of force. And you look first, that's okay. But if your fist is clenched and you just accident, you know, just a like that shouldn't be the only factor that determines whether it was violent or not.
You could go full rock, open hand. That's fine. Exactly. Open hand, you're fine. Yeah, no, it's kind of very similar to what they used to justify the Guimaraes one. I forgot who he followed, but it's ridiculous, man. Like you don't even have to watch it in slow motion to see that. And here's the thing, by the way, speaking about, and I'm going to bring up history and reputations of players when we're discussing the Saka thing. We know the world of football knows what Harry Kane is. The world of football knows that he does things like this. He undercuts players. The world of football knows this. And to be so benevolent with him, looking at the replay in slow motion, watching him check his left over his left shoulder and then just let go of his right elbow. It's ridiculous, dude. And by the way, I don't understand the language of he's been cautioned over, I forgot what it was, the aggression or something. And I'm like, I don't understand. Like, was he aggressive? Was he purposefully aggressive towards an opponent? Yes. That's a foul. That's intentional. Like, I don't understand how they could word F themselves into a corner and justify a yellow card. I'm baffled that that wasn't a red card.
It is. It's amazing. And the fact they're not even going to go and look at it. I mean, the referee gave so much stuff away in the game anyway. I'm just looking through the photos here. We've got the one that's where Saka's going to score his goal, which, I mean, not enough has been made about the way that Saka took that, ran through them, and then placed it in the goal.
It was an unbelievable finish. I jumped out of the pool when he scored that. I made this hugest splash.
Splash Mountain.
Yeah, it was. There was just water flying everywhere. And other fluids, but yeah, I mean, where he gets the ball and the fact that he puts the ball into the side netting, essentially, the inside netting, which is unstoppable. You can't predict what's going to happen next with this guy. When he's playing well, and he did on Wednesday, he's unstoppable. That was Arjen Robben-esque plus some.
We don't talk about Arjen Robben in the presence of Mexicans. Thank you. Hashtag no era penal.
That goal there.
I'm always in the presence of Mexicans, so how can I ever talk about it?
The dozens of
Raya's game. They're having a moment to have a look at them chucking it away like a couple of little children.
Danny, just real quick, because you mentioned they didn't go and check it. In Champions, I'm not 100% sure, but in Champions League, they never call the main ref over to look at the screen. All done in the background. So in England, we would potentially see it, but in Champions League, it's whatever the VAR panel says, the ref gives them a few seconds, and that's what they roll with. So the main guy, the main match official, was never going to have the opportunity to watch it himself. So it was just he's at the will of the panel.
You're talking about history. Did you know that in the old days it used to be 2 points for a win? No, Mike did.
Yeah.
Huh?
Up until the mid-80s, until the early 80s, it was 2 points for a win.
I was going to know that, Danny. Hold on.
And in Italy, Italy did it for even longer than we did. 2 points a win. That's there you insane. Go. Huh?
That's insane. I had. Was the draw still one?
Yeah.
And back in the day, there has been different ways of winning the league. Sometimes it was on points per game or goals per game. That was another one, rather than goal difference. That was teams have lost out on the league on that back in the olden days. I just want to talk about this man here, Mr. Hertz, Raya, in the middle. When you look at his placement for their the build-up to their goal, what the hell is he doing? He had a terrible game, didn't he?
Yeah, I don't know, caught between two minds. I don't know if there was a lack of communication.
And neither of them know about football.
Neither, yeah. I was baffled to see him. Now, I put myself in this weird camp that I'm a big fan of Gabriel, and maybe potentially my own bias. I get a little bit more defensive with him. And I'm well aware that there's a group of the fan base, maybe less so now than at the beginning of the season, where they're like, no, we're Raya till we die, because that chose him over Ramsdale, and that's what we're going with. I saw a lot of views where after what Raya did, I saw a lot of comments like Gabriel should have done better with the ball.
And he couldn't.
That's my theory, Danny. I'm like, you could. So two things, Gabriel.
What's he going to do? Keep your uppies until Raya's back in goal.
Gabriel, clearly in possession of the ball, is looking at Raya, begging him to back up. And Raya is not backing up, giving him space for the traditional normal back pass.
He should have just kicked the ball out to touch.
Look, maybe he would have pissed that out at that moment, but 100%, like, if you're in a split second, if you're truly panicking, he tried to get clever and play it into transition and start off play with Kivior. And unfortunately, that pass got intercepted. So maybe if you're not feeling super confident, just boot it. We've seen, I think, Ben White just boot it before. I don't think there's that much of an issue, but yeah, I don't know, man. Raya, he got caught wanting to do too much is my theory. Again, the bright side about this is it's not something that he does often. So I'm sure he's got a sturdy talking to. I'm sure it won't be something that we'll see again anytime soon. But yeah, as Phil Maka said in the live chat, brain fart from Raya part.
Yeah, how about your thoughts, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, I chalk it up to a moment of madness. I mean, we've seen those from our keepers in the past. We've seen, who was it that handled the ball like 40 yards from the goal?
I only found out about that. I thought you were going to say that the penalty they should have had. We're going to come to that after this goalkeeper thing.
No, but was it Leno that did that? Like, it was against like Olympiacos or something. I forget what game it was, but he was way out of the box and he handled it like, duh. And we've had a lot of those. Raya has been amazing the last 2 months. So, you know, and frankly, while it led to the series of things that led to the goal, he was able to get back and get set to a degree, not perfectly set, before the shot came in. So, I mean, there was a lot more than just that. It would not have happened had not it been for that. But that isn't going to happen again. So, again, you know, would you rather drop? I mean, let's call this a draw, and let's use the drop points analogy, even though there weren't points physically dropped. Would you rather drop points because of non-recurring moments of madness in a general run of good play? Or would you rather drop points because you're just not good enough to win or you just couldn't score? In this case, I'd rather have the, you know, the moments of madness, because you know that those can be worked out and they shouldn't be it's not like we're putting Mustafi back out there again after he had a bad first leg, because we've got nobody better to put out there. They won't do that again.
Ironically, so, Mike, if it was Mustafi, Raya would have just got the ball, because Mustafi had a habit of just quitting. He's like, I'm not going to run anymore. I'm going to point at somebody, and it's his
fault. Mustafi would have been doing that dance thing, like in the middle of the pitch, while the ball was headed back towards Raya. But
do you remember the Aguero one, where Mustafi just said, "Fuck it, you're offside. I'm going to stop running."
God, he's constantly sliding on his ass.
There are too many to remember. God,
I was just so furious. He just literally just stopped. Like, nah, I'm calling offside. Like, mother flipping, you're killing me.
I remember after every single goal we conceded for 3 years, the first thing I would see is Mustafi just going like this. I don't know why. He wasn't taking responsibility for it. It's not like in basketball where the guy calls for the foul on himself.
Corner kick.
Yeah, no, it was basically just something must have happened that means that we didn't, you know, I'm like.
They couldn't have possibly made it past me legally.
Also, breaking news, Mike, Mr. Magic, you know that restaurant we went to, the one that had burgers that weren't allowed to sell you burgers?
No, it's closed.
Who'd have figured? You have a burger and pizza restaurant that say they're not allowed to serve you a burger because they're in the same area as McDonald's. And then they put
Rocket on the pizza.
Dirty bastards. Paul Nell turned up on a pizza,
you deserve to get shut down.
And he's getting black market.
I don't even eat pizza now. I eat absolutely nothing. This is meat-based.
Go behind on the church at the end of your road. That's where there's some burgers.
Do you remember that dessert, though? I mean, no. I couldn't eat that today. But
I had my eyes closed as you were feeding me, so I don't remember.
Oh, it was like some chocolatey, waffly. Oh, it was ridiculous. But that was that was back when I was able to eat sugar and fat and almost explode and look like that version of Mesut Ozil.
Oh no, man! Paul Nell says, "Hope everyone is well. That 3-0 loss for Liverpool makes our 2-2 feel a lot better. It does. True. It's a good point, isn't it? I don't think they agree with you." We'll move on.
I wasn't sure if you were making the comment or bantering, by the way. I was too busy. I Google searched Mustafi and images, and on the first page, there's about five of him either pointing at somebody or with his hands up, because I just generally got
curious. Or in that weird little dance move, or in his underwear in the dressing room.
Yeah, those are the mainstays. But no, dude, it's kind of funny. Social media is a weird thing, Danny. So we saw so much comments yesterday of Liverpool fans saying that we're embarrassing the league. We're not representing them correctly. Arsenal couldn't beat Bayern Munich at home. And less than 24 hours or 24 hours later, 3-0.
Yeah, well, they'll claim that they were intentionally sandbagging that because it's the Europa League and they have a league to win. I mean, that's what they'll claim. That wasn't how they went.
Just a few things. I mean, Mr. You work, never walk alone, and Mr. We're unbreakable. And they were leaving the stadium at minute 85 in potentially Jurgen Klopp's last European game for the club. They were just effing off 5 minutes before the game even ended. And so also Atalanta, sixth place in Serie A.
They've won one in their last six in Serie A.
Yeah. So literally, man, it's pretty remarkable how it played out. I fully understand that Liverpool, I don't know if I can
they'll
say
win, they'll win 5-1. They'll win 5-1 at Atalanta.
Bro, just play good old-fashioned Arteta ball, bro. Just fucking put 10 men behind the ball. Line two key. Is there a rule that says you can't put two keepers? That's what I want to know. Because if not,
I've been saying that for a long time. I want two keepers. I mean, one will not be able to use his hands, but can play behind the back four. And
you're gonna dig it.
Yeah.
I mean, you could have a goalkeeper going out and wearing a outfield player's kit, and then playing as a kind of sweeper in front of the goalkeeper, knowing what the goalkeeper
That's what I've been saying. Like you could do worse than having Ramsdale out there cutting down angles.
But there is a wide degree of what is unsportsmanlike conduct, and you never know, that might come up as that. You know what those twats are like. Anything they can to ruin the game.
To me, that kind of smacks of that's no less legal. I mean, you're taking your chances. That's no different than lying a guy down behind the free kick wall.
Yeah, need someone to be brave enough to start 11 goalkeepers. Have we got 11? I know we've got three.
Yeah, we could recall Okonkwo from Wrexham. They're already getting promoted to League One just about. So
true.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, what we're doing now. We just know that what we're doing now is not working. So we need to try something completely new. Because we're not winning the league by enough, and we haven't put away the Champions League quarterfinal in the first leg yet.
Right. So to summarize the Bayern game, me and Mr. Hertz think we're going through, and Mike thinks it's going to go to penalties. Is that fair?
Yeah, and you know, English teams and England always do well against German teams in Germany in penalty kicks. It's just everyone knows that. So.
Phil asks, do we have any centre backs on the bench anymore? I was busy looking for a photo, so I didn't ask that. Of course, Tommy, we have centre backs. Yeah.
Kjaer is a centre back. I mean, we don't have any true centre backs in the David Luiz mold or the you know, those kinds of guys, but instead we basically have there's one guy on our one defender for this team that really could only play the one position, and that's Saliba. And my God, can he play it? But every other player can either play in the center or as a fullback. Every single one of them.
Yeah, I mean, they've got five center backs at the club: Saliba, White, Gabriel, Kivior, and Tomiyasu can all play at top level at center back. And the rest of them are all left backs. Even Thomas Partey is deputized there.
You take a big step down when you don't have those two starting. But I mean, we've started other people in center back this season, haven't we? Haven't we needed to? Well, we did earlier in the year when Gabriel was inexplicably on the bench, and Partey was at right back. That was when Ben White was playing next to Saliba. But I think our depth at center back is fine. It's just that you're not going to get the performance you're going to get out of those two. Those two are the best center back tandem in Europe right now.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Except for the other night.
Before the pod started, boys and girls, mums and dads, cats and dogs, we were talking about the mighty Bayer Leverkusen with a certain Granit Xhaka, one of my favourite Arsenal players of recent years. In the Bundesliga, played 28, drawn 24, won 24, drawn 4, lost none. They went through to the German FA Cup final. They won all five of their games there. Tonight, they absolutely smashed West Ham. Mike, Mr. Hertz, what was the number of shots at goal?
33 shots total, 15 on target, I believe. And it for versus West Ham, one shot, one on target.
And they scored only twice, Leverkusen?
Yeah.
So what's his name? Fabianski must have had a huge game. Or Areola, which one was it?
That's a good question. I don't know.
I mean, 13 saves?
Yeah, I'm sorry, XG reference, second one of the game. 13 shots on target. Their XG for the 13 was 2.8. So they must have been a lot of shots, but it seems like with a low XG based on 13 shots, I'm starting to think that there was a crap load of them coming from the outside of the box, most likely, like really improbable shot.
Every time they got in the opposition's half, they just put a shot on.
They wanted to go like full Zidane halfway shot, see if they could score.
Well, looking at the stats here, Wirtz had one on target, Schlick had three, Adli had one, Grimando had one, Xhaka had two, Frimpong had one, Tarr and Tasoba, they played three centre backs. They both had two, and they had 12 off target, and eight shots were blocked by Mike. It was Fabianski in goal. But West Ham also played three at the back, which I don't remember them doing much this season, if at all. But there again, they could have done it every game for all I know. So we had two ex-Gooners playing, or three, Mavropanos, Fabianski, and Xhaka all playing in that game.
You know, four Gooners scored in our game against Bayern Munich. All four goals were scored by Arsenal players.
Okay, well played.
I'm trying to think who scored their goal.
To remember. Anybody remember how many shots Arsenal gave up to Wolves under Unai Emery? Is it 20?
It was 200. It was like 30. I remember that game. No, it was Watford.
Watford.
It was early in the season. I remember I was in Missouri watching. I was visiting my daughter in college, or moving her in, and and I forget his name, but there was a guy who lived in the same town, and we watched it at our hotel in the lobby restaurant, and that was painful, that game. They were just pepper. I mean, if that's what people claim they wanted to support Unai Emery with, then I don't get it. But yeah,
you know, I think you hold on to what you hope, you hold on too much sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Face Arsenal. Here's a headline. Arsenal faced more shots versus Watford than they did during their last 8-2 versus United.
Yeah, that game was a travesty.
Sad times. Let's move on a little bit and talk about, I mean, we already said how good. Say that again.
31 shots. Sorry.
Against Watford.
Watford, 31 shots, yeah.
Oochie mama. Yeah, Bayer Leverkusen. Hopefully, they're everybody's second favourite team at the moment. So hopefully they're going to go on and they're going to win the Bundesliga this weekend. They're going to go and win the German Cup when they're playing bottom of Bundesliga 2, Kaiserslautern, ex-Bundesliga champions. And then they are going to get to the final. And looking at the two teams that are... Oh, the page just changed. Benfica beat Marseille 2-1, return leg at Marseille. Roma went to some team in Milan. They look shit and beat them 1-0. We move on from that. Horrible. We don't want tears. And Atalanta, Anfield 3-0. Fucking hell. It's not like Liverpool didn't have any decent players playing. They had an unpronounceable Irish bloke in goal. And they had Van Dijk played, Konate, Gomez, McAllister, Elliot, Nunez, Gakpo, Jones, Endo. And then they brought off on Salah, Szoboszlai, Jota and Robertson, and they still lost. Even after they brought all those players on, they still managed to concede another goal in the third minute. Oh, itchy nostril. So, yeah, it's good, and I love it. And so hopefully they will do the triple and go undefeated the entire season. Didn't West Ham do that last season when they won the Conference League? They didn't lose a game in the entire run.
I don't watch that competition.
No, it's below you now.
Although they are champions of Europe, though. They know who they are.
They know who they are.
They know what they are, sorry.
Yeah, that as well. So weekend. We are playing on Sunday. It is a 4:30 kickoff at home to Aston Villa. Magic, what's your thoughts about that? Can we make it? I think that'll be 9 Premier League games in a row unbeaten.
I'm going to go with a 2-2.
Oh. No need for that.
I'll never say another score when I'm confident. I'll never say another score other than 2-2.
Well, that's going to ruin our season. We need to win it.
It's not going to happen. I'm just,
they're rubbish. They got smashed at home last week, didn't they?
All I can predict is 2-2. That's all I can do. Sorry. If you know my history with predictions, then you know why I'm doing that.
Well, I'm going to look in the Premier League, Mr. Magic, Mr. Hertz, and see what we can do if I do that. And I do away Premier League games, and I'll give you some of the results. They lost 4-1 at Man City, they drew 1-1 at West Ham. They beat Luton 3-2. They beat Fulham 2-1. They smashed Sheffield United 5-0. Everton 0-0. Lost 3-2 to Man United. Does that give you any hope that we are going to beat them? Because Ollie Watkins is the most informed goal scorer and assister in the Premier League in the whole of last year, and now including this year, I think.
We're at home versus Villa, aren't we?
Yeah.
Yeah, we should be fine. I'm not too... Yeah, I'm more looking towards the mental block that is United, and the form goes out the window versus Spurs. I was relatively relaxed for the Brighton game. I know that tension is starting to build up a little bit. You know, a lot of the online discourse, it seemed like the sky was falling. And then I Google searched the result, and we were 1-0 up with one shot conceded versus Brighton. But for the most part, I think Arteta has a really good game plan to go up against local teams in England. I don't know what it is in Europe. He hasn't managed to win a home game yet, but I don't just see it, man. I think they've pocketed Haaland before multiple times, and I take what you're saying that Watkins is on form, but Unai Emery, similar to Ange over there at Spurs, tends to play suicide ball, and they're very adventurous. So I think they're going to leave plenty of spaces for wingers to find some joy. So I'm I'm going to go. Well, Mikey goes with the 2-2, so I'll just go with the 2-0.
Remember 5 weeks ago, exact same position, but one round earlier in the Champions League, in between the two Porto games. Now we're in between the two Bayern games. And we had a home game against a lesser opponent. And I was screaming from the mountaintops. I'm like, I feel confident about us avenging Porto. What I worry about is us struggling and slipping on a banana peel against Brentford. And that game was nearly a drop point situation. I mean, Kai won it in the 86th minute right in front of us, which was amazing. But you know, the only thing that makes me feel differently about this game is Brentford went into that game to play anti-football. The ball was out of play for more than half the game. They were kicking. And I don't know that Unai Emery at Aston Villa takes that same approach. They should, but I'm not sure that they will. But it's more just the eyes on Europe on Wednesday. Relatively easy game at home, although Villa's never really easy, but like it's more just the will they all be there and be sharp on Sunday than it is I don't think that we can beat Villa. That's not why I'm predicting a draw. I'm predicting a draw purely on superstitious grounds. That's the only reason. But
Villa also played their full strength team today in the Conference League.
I mean, that helps. That certainly helps. Thursday to Sunday is very different than Tuesday to Sunday.
Yeah.
I mean, it should be fine, but, you know, I'll exhale when it's over because these Sunday games before a massive European tie, you can't take those games off because there's 7 games left in a Premier League that we're in the lead of right now. So it's not a matter of which one do we focus on. It's you got to win both. And that's not something that we had in our experience gaining season of last season where we kind of, you know, ran out of steam and didn't pace ourselves properly. Now I think we're in a much better position mentally and physically, but we've got these two games back to back that are going to be real, real, real tough. So, Paul asked a question about us. We'll be together at the game in LA against, who are we playing? United?
Sure. I have no idea. You bought the ticket. I'm just showing up to the event.
You shelled $300 over to me and you don't even know what it's for?
Oh, is there a game? I thought that was a fan event that I paid you for.
That was an autograph signing for me. You got the special co-podcaster discount. But I'll be in Philly and then both of us will be in LA.
It's $300 for one ticket.
It was close to that.
For what?
It's Danny, absurd.
I'm telling you. How I thought it was, I'm not going to say funny, but it was so bizarre for me when like Bundesliga had this massive protest saying 20 is plenty.
Yeah.
And they were like saying that I kid you not, Danny, my season tickets to the San Jose Earthquakes are probably comparable
to one game.
Yeah. It's insane. It's the what they do to American fans, and soccer's only catching up, Danny. I don't know what a Champions League final ticket costs, but I could tell you that I went to one of potentially 4 finals in the World Series for baseball, and my single ticket up in all the flipping way up was $1,400 just to be at the World Series. So what they do to fans, and you start talking about American football, my God, some of those tickets are like 10 grand, if not more, depending on the city they are. So it's insane.
It's bullshit is what it is. I wouldn't pay that for a season ticket, let alone for one game. Especially when it could be 7 World Series games. The amount of money they're making. Absolutely ridiculous.
A whole lot of moolah.
Mark said he doesn't know who the Las Vegas game will be. So the Aston Villa game, I think we're going to win it because it's going to be they are away to Lille on the Thursday. We are away to Bayern Munich on the Wednesday. We have got a bigger squad and a stronger squad, but we've got a more important game. So it's going to be hard to predict the starting 11 for each side. But knowing Mikel, he is going to try and push everybody to play both games. And from our history with Emery, I'd say that he's going to drop players like he did when we played teams and try and that's why we failed under him, because remember that Europa League run, he sacrificed the league to try and win the Europa League and ended up, I mean, not to win the league, to get Champions League, and he ended up shitting the bed in both occasions. So I expect him to do the same thing, and hopefully that'll be a win for us because, yes, Antumi put something in here earlier. That was about the game that Unai's going to have to rotate. I think he will indeed. Anybody got any questions in the chat? I doubt it very much because no one ever really does. It says there's 14 of you watching and still the Twitter count is out because it says there's 217 watching on Twitter. There's not. There's one and that's me. Me and Master Gunner.
Why the chat gets in questions if they are going to ask the questions. Arsplug brought up this point when they were discussing the Gabriel handball. It said that calling that a penalty would be akin to Robin Van Persie's yellow card versus Barcelona. It's failing to use common sense. The opponent team didn't have anything to gain, and it's really just that particular moment, the ref looking at it black and white and say, sorry, those are the rules. So, something that somebody highlighted actually on Twitter, and leave it up to Twitter detectives, is we actually do that a lot. He came up with a clip. It was a tweet, and we did that like in three or four separate occasions in the league. Now, in those separate occasions, I couldn't tell you if there was a whistle, but it's clearly like Raya gives it to Gabriel. Gabriel grabs it with his hands. Mind you, side note, I don't understand why footballers have the habit of grabbing things with their hands. He gave it to you on the ground. Why do you feel the need to pick it up? But that's besides the point. But Gabriel grabs it with his hands, puts it down, passes to Ryan. Raya starts off the play. We've actually done that a number of times in the league. So I don't know. It's something that's always kind of gone under the spotlight because nobody really calls it out. And I know the TV coverage in America, they didn't, everybody was confused to why.
TNT didn't mention it in this country either.
Not at all. And matter of fact, again, given that small podcast, just it's plugged because I want them to do well, the Gunnar Talk. He asked Eric Dyer, I believe, about the Arsenal penalty, and Dyer responded with, you know, hey, what about our penalty? And Tom was legitimately like, what penalty? And every journalist in that room was unaware of the penalty that they were talking about. So this is kind of something that came up more after the game. And it was more highlighted because the Bayern Munich players started talking about it so much. So, Mike, I mean, common sense or black and white rules? How do you view this?
It's hard to come up. Well, it's hard to come up with a thought on it because it was so long after the game that I even realized that it happened. So, you know, yeah, common sense is you don't call that a penalty. I guess it would be a penalty. There's no indirect kick or anything like that that you could do. But I mean, it was clearly a mistake or misunderstanding. It wasn't Gabriel trying to gain an advantage. So, it'd be awfully harsh to claim that gave Bayern Munich more of an advantage than what happened to Saka in the 90th minute gained him an advantage versus, I mean, the two are just on completely different planes, but if you're reading the rule book, literally he touched the ball with his hands while it was in play, in his own penalty box. So, I'm thankful that they didn't call that. I mean, can you imagine how much that would have absolutely just destroyed the game if all of a sudden the whistle blows, he points to the spot, and we're all like, what the fuck?
Well, we know it won't happen again.
No, I don't think that will happen again. But that was bizarre. I mean, I did not notice it in real time, had no idea what they were even talking about until after the game.
Got a few questions. Chris Jones says, this one for you, Mr. Hertz. How much rotation does Mikel do for this game? Sunday, Wednesday is a quick turnaround, and we look to have a few leggy players. We did cover it a little bit, but what was your answer?
At home versus Villa, I mean, I venture to say Partey and Smith Rowe could weasel themselves into the starting Eddie? Lineup. Was that? No, I think Eddie's
Ramsdale.
I think his credit Eddie's credit in the bank has officially disappeared, bankrupt. I believe. Yeah. And I don't every game right now is so important that I don't think that he would go that deep into rotation.
He comes in the 85th minute of a three or more goal lead.
Yeah. So I'll say this, man, Arteta is a really massive believer that elite players play week in, week out. So I can tell you that I don't expect heavy rotation. I think the Luton at home was a special type of situation, and not only Luton suffering at the bottom of the table, but they also had some ridiculous number, like 13, 16 injured players. So we were playing
at 465 injured players,
465 confirmed, 465 injured players. So that was like a really like a unicorn moment for us in the season. But if I'm thinking about Bayern Munich, I'm thinking about more match fitness and where we could get away with getting certain players, certain minutes. So I'm hoping to see Tomiyasu potentially start, Partey potentially start, and Smith Rowe. So I have zero hopes that Saka and Martinelli are not starting that game. Ben White started, our center back started. Ramsdale, I can't remember him. We're not playing against Brentford, so it's gonna be Raya. I mean that's the unfortunate destiny of Aaron Ramsdale, is to be sold to Newcastle, I guess. I don't know. I don't see him sticking around.
Yeah, I would much rather start with our full strength lineup and hopefully get into cruise mode in the second half, and make some early substitutions to get some of those minutes off of our starters. I mean, you know, look, Trossard's got to be raring to play, you know, 45 or more minutes. You know, there's a few others. Tomiyasu's fresh. I would play to try to win the game early if possible. Hope that you don't get into a Brentford type situation where it's 1-1 late into the game and you really have to keep playing those players, rather than the alternative, which is the whole early round FA Cup thing where you have all your big guns on the bench and then like shit, it's 0-0 against Colchester. Now we got to bring in our five actual starters, you know, in the 70th minute to try to pull this game out. I'd rather do it the other way. And, these games are so important that you want your best players playing. I'm not comfortable rotating guys that are, you know, that are not the preferred starter to start a game against Aston Villa in game 32 of a title race. But I would love to be able to pull them off early.
There's a few other questions. Phil Macker says, can you go to sleep? No.
No. You can't go to sleep until an hour after the show is over.
Yeah, Phil follows that up with, do you agree Partey had a stinker when he came on, just isn't game ready? I think it's going to be a few of those. Most people said he weren't going to make it back for the season, so when you've been out that long, you ain't going to get back to game match fitness for quite a while. Might not even manage it this season. Who else? Paul Nell said, how much would you change the lineup? I think they've just covered that lot. And he also says, just as any coming in Sunday, would you make major changes? Well, there you go. There was your answer to that. And Phil's a little bit heartbroken about Rami. Well, I think that's it. That's almost an hour and a half. I think you're getting your money's worth there, people. So any final words from you, Mr. Hertz, before we go?
No final words. I was going to say something silly about the league title, but I don't want to jinx it. So
there's no such thing as jinxing.
No such
thing. Luck.
Yes, there is.
There fucking is not. It's mathematically impossible.
Sit back and enjoy the ride. I know it's incredibly difficult because we start every single game saying it's the most important game of the season because we're at the tail end of the season. So, try to relax, try to enjoy the game, try to enjoy the occasion. The title will eventually come in the next year, if not this year. Just enjoy the game, Gooners. Relax, enjoy it, take it in strides.
And where can people find you if they like the cut of your jib?
The cut of my jib. I will Google search what that means. You could find us on Not Another Arsenal Podcast. Oh, that. No, I can't grow that to save my life.
No, cut of your jib means it's a sailing term. You trim your sails, I think.
Sail. I'm all over my head right now. What was I talking about, Danny? Oh, yeah, the podcast. Not Another Arsenal Podcast. 280 subscribers this far. We have been making strides towards 300 this season. Pretty happy about it. So if you're in the live chat, and I recognize a lot of you in the live chat, actually, but if, you know, any of you aren't subscribed, I would really appreciate you going over there, giving us a follow. We normally podcast around this time Tuesday nights, which is normally 2-3 o'clock in the morning over there in the UK, but catch us on replay if you will. Give us a chance. Just four Yanks talking about football. Once a week podcast. So we go long, normally 2 hours, but you won't get enough of us because it's only once a week. So not horrible.
And I actually listen. So that means it's got to be good.
It is really, really good. Like I've seen that podcast since the beginning, and it wasn't so good at the beginning, but then again, neither was ours. So we still haven't figured it's better than our podcast on the Gooner Spot. Those four are the chemistry and the humor is fantastic. And they also, unlike what you say, Danny, they do know quite a bit about football. So if you haven't watched it, watch it. Thank you to everyone in the chat, especially those of you who are up until weird hours in the night watching this. It was good to see you, Phil. Good to see you, Paul. And obviously Bill BX, always good to see you. So, thank you for joining us. We had an off day for the new pod that I've been doing from Highbury to the Grove, but we'll be back next Thursday with another podcast featuring an ex-Arsenal cult hero and former player for the club. So that can be caught on the Gooners podcast or on Highbury Squad.
Perry Groves then?
Maybe.
Possibly.
You know. He's in my Rolodex. Might be.
Casually, he's in my Rolodex.
Oh, here we go. Sai's turned up. Sai, just go and click on that link and go and subscribe to Mike's channel if you haven't already. And Humi, you go and subscribe as well.
Yeah, he's a regular in the chat, actually. So
it's seriously good. The show from 2 weeks ago.
Oh, my goodness.
I fell out of bed laughing and crying 18 times. It was so funny.
Yeah. Fun show.
You lot are doing... a wrestling pod, weren't you? And I was listening to it in bed, sending Mike WhatsApp messages after it had finished, going about teeth. And it turns out when he said, "I've always had these teeth," he hasn't always had the teeth.
It was Gangrel. Yeah. No, we were talking about Gangrel. Yeah. No, we'll do another wrestling pod. Mikey's getting more into wrestling than he ever has been before. So we'll be doing another one.
You know what? There's
way more people who are into Arsenal and wrestling than you would think. Like, There's a large percentage of the Arsenal fan base on social media that just also loves WWE. It's hilarious.
I was surprised at the messages I received after that pod. But, Mike, you remember how you said the Owen Hart thing got you into wrestling again?
Bizarrely,
yes. I right now remembered what got me out of wrestling.
Was it the Owen Hart thing?
Lesnar breaking the streak.
Oh, jeez.
I remember being so pissed off, like, so like, wait, that's not, did they like miscount? I was so, and I was like, nah.
He wasn't going to be around much longer. He could have made it 27 and everyone would have been happy.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. That kind of surprised me. Have you seen the videos of the people reacting to Roman Reigns losing and just absolutely tearing up everything in their house?
It's just the horror. Yeah.
He's horrible. And his whole clan is horrible. They're dirty. They look like they all need a wash. They probably do because they're wrestlers. They're so greasy.
This is how the show starts. So
greasy.
We'll have you on. We'll have JJ on. James Johnstone.
Oh, he knows.
Perfect to have on that podcast.
I actually watched the Owen Hart thing live.
Nick was in the Nick was in the chat for our pod, for our wrestling pod.
Oh, Nicky Wilson.
Yeah.
Yeah, he likes it. Yeah, a lot of people do. It's good. And WrestleMania, I think WrestleMania will bring a lot of fans back to wrestling because that was an old school proper one.
Yeah, it was a good show.
I mean, everyone still looks like they got dressed in a fancy dress shop in the dark. But anyway, we can't talk about ours. That'll be another hour. And it's 20 to 3 in the morning and Sean's home. So I've got to get up to be up early tomorrow. I say up early, 3 o'clock.
Give my best to Sean.
No, you can do that next time you come over.
No.
So, yeah, thank you very much. Not you either. Thank you very much, Mr. Hertz. You've been an absolute joy.
Thanks so much, man. Really appreciate it. Keep the invitations coming anytime I can. I will be on to chat with you, Danny.
Lovely. And thank you, Magic Mike. You've been, You've been here.
You've been present, and that matters.
Oh, look, he's giving me the V's. So, so immature. No wonder they don't let him on his own podcast anymore. And thank you very much to the chat. You lot have been, well, you know, you've been here. You've been good. You've been a little bit bad at times. Gooners versus Cancer, that's coming up soon, Mike. I know that we'll do a Sunday roast where it'll just be you talking about that for the whole time. I'll cook my dinner while you're doing that.
Yeah, I'm not sure any charity would want me representing it in the way that we would be representing it on the Sunday roast, but we'll see.
We will indeed. I like this little video for the end.
Yeah.
Love it.
Wonderful.
Bunch of people looking mean and Aaron Ramsdale looking like a giddy four-year-old.
looking like he saw the bird.
He looks like he was a Labrador in a previous life. Anyway. We need to end the show. So we will be back on Saturday sometime. Stan isn't available for the preview show, so I don't know who I'm going to use. And Sunday, me and Deke after the show. So thank you very much, everybody, and goodbye.
Later.
As soon as I scored that goal, I was fucking livid.
Get down, dog.
Splendid business.
He nearly caught the bloody thing. What are you talking about?
So I've just eaten a full quiche. Well, you don't often see them at Ibs. So when you see them in the supermarket, they need to be swagged, microwaved immediately, and get the brown sauce on and bosh, Bob's your uncle.
Never in doubt.